Okay, first of all, listeners, oh, I'm so excited today that we have Chia Mosley on the podcast. Yes, thank you so much for joining So Mind-Boggling Journeys. I'm so excited to have you here. This is a little bit of a departure from what we usually do. Usually we talk to, artists and different creatives about their journeys. And I stumbled upon you on Instagram. I know sometimes you mentioned TikTok and I was like, oh, she's on TikTok too. But I stumbled upon you on Instagram and your story. I don't know how, because I was like, well, now I know that we do have one mutual friend in common. But I was like, oh, how did this pop up in my feed? And I literally think that it was divine intervention and timing, because I have so many friends that are new moms and or moms or, you know, moms to be, or women who want to be moms. And everyone is kind of, maybe not everybody, let me not say everybody, but a good majority of them are kind of going through their own difficulty, or they did before they had their children. And I wanted to talk to you because I loved how you spoke about you conceived naturally.
Yeah.
And I thought that was amazing. At 47, you conceived naturally at 47. And a lot of women that I know, they are having to do other methods. And even though that's normally, I think that's more the majority of the case.
Mm-hmm.
On the podcast, I want to, highlight those stories too. But on the podcast, we believe in dreams, magic, and miracles here.
Yes.
Story I felt was such a story of dream, magic, and miracles. And I wanted to hear it. I felt like we needed it. We needed that. Like, I know you say that a lot of women reach out to you and say that you've been like a source of hope for them.
Mm-hmm.
I would love for you to share with us your story on the podcast. So thank you again for being here. And yeah, can you go right into it? Just go right into how you ended up bringing little Naomi Earthside.
Yeah. It's such an interesting journey, and you nailed it correctly. This is a story of hope. And I like that, because I get a lot of women asking me, oh, did I do IVF or what vitamins or what nutrition and la, la, la. And I was like, I was not planning to have a baby. I was willing to have a baby. Having a baby was something that me and Lauren is her father's name. So it's like Lauren with a D at the end. We talked about it. It wasn't something that we gave no consideration to. We did give consideration to it, but we decided together that we were willing to have a baby if it happened, but we weren't going to go out of our way to make a baby come. Like, that was a causative decision. And it was like in passing almost, like, you know what? Like, maybe we were talking about someone else. I can't remember, but we decided on the spot, which is how a lot of miracles can maybe happen. It's not a lot of like think and figure. It's a very instant agreement. I was just like, I don't want to do IVF or anything like that. And he was like, yeah, no, me neither. And I was like, okay, good. And I think we went off to like cooking dinner.
Oh my gosh.
It wasn't like a whole lot of talk and discussion, but let me rewind, because our conversation about having a baby was in bits and pieces over time. So here's the real talk. We were using protection, okay? And then all of a sudden, I noticed he was no longer reaching for the protection, and I was okay with that. But I was like, we need to have a conversation about what this could lead to. So I was like, you know, honey, when you're doing what we're doing, you know that this could produce a baby, right? And yeah. I was like, do you want to have a baby? And it was a pause, right? And then a little smirk came on his face like this. And he goes, yeah, I would be okay with that. And I'm like, okay, good. So that was like the very first like subtle, it was no pressure, no like long drawn out conversations. And I think that that's the beauty between he and I. When we agree on something, it does not take a whole lot of in-depth long conversation. It was very instant.
Back and forth, not a bunch of back and forth.
Mm-mm. It was just like, cause I thought about it. I was like, I would like to have his baby. Like, I would be happy to have that happen. And he had a very instant result too, or instant reaction to it, right? So that was the first step, our first agreement that, yeah, that would be good. Then fast forward in time, we did have that conversation about how we would be interested in having a baby. And we were interested in it the lazy way. It would just have to want to be a part of our family and show up. And I know you had a question about this. And there, to us, there's a spiritual aspect.
Yes.
Right? Like, I think no matter if you're spiritual or if you're religious, you have a concept that there's your body, there's, you know, and then there's you, the spirit, and these are separate entities that work in concert with one another. And a baby is no different. You know, just because the baby can't talk yet or can't walk doesn't mean that there's no entity connected with it. So there were, we decided there would have to be someone who wanted us, especially at our ages. Like, you know, we've given up our right to demand a baby. We felt now that we know that there are other women and men out there who are maybe in our age category and they are doing IVF. And that comment is not meant to sway what you are doing. This is our attitude. Yeah.
So please throw all the disclaimers out there.
Because I also do understand it. It's like, if you really want to have a family and this is such a worthwhile thing to have, if you want to put in the extra work to make that happen, I understand it. For us, we didn't want to put in the extra work to make it happen. We wanted it to come just on its own if it were to come. And if it wasn't going to come, we understood that as well. So that is our, you know, that's my disclaimer, because I definitely understand why people work to have a family. It's worth it. Mm-hmm.
So just to backtrack for the listeners. So one of the questions I asked Chia was, you know, I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was our good sis, Oprah, you know, our good auntie Oprah, who said that children choose their parents. I feel like she introduced that idea many, many moons ago about children choose their parents. Like, before they are born earthside, they decide who, you know, they want to be born to. Because I remember I was like, did I ask for Lavinia? That's my mama. No, I love my mom. She's great. But, you know, so that's what I was asking.
Who you were when you chose your mama may not be who you evolved to later.
What exactly was I choosing this to for? But no, I love my mom. She's great. Okay. So I was wondering if you felt the same way, if you felt that little Naomi chose you all. So that was what she was referring to about the spiritual component of it all.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. And absolutely. Listen, so at the time when I conceived, I was 46 and Lauren, he was 44. He's a little bit younger than me. I'm a little cougarish. So for a baby to work with those age demographics, because it does take two, a lot of times there's a lot of focus on the woman's health, but the man has to be healthy too, right?
Right.
So, but we're dealing with age, healthy or unhealthy, we're dealing with likelihoods of not being able to conceive. And so for her to make it go right and come out like no issues, to come out with no issues, I say, That's her. And throughout my entire pregnancy, I always gave her credit, because here I am. I'm, you know, conceived at 46 and then birthed at 47. And I didn't have any complications, like not one. I never had high blood pressure. I never had edema, swelling. I didn't struggle with gestational diabetes. I didn't need bed rest. I didn't. And when I say like no swelling, I mean like nothing swollen.
Wait a minute. You didn't have any swelling?
None. I kept waiting for it to show up. It's like when I say I had nothing.
I came with the factory settings. No.
Okay. Like she. And so, and then I only gained about a little over 20 pounds. And in fact, in my last OB visits, the OB was like, are you eating? Like, it was kind of like that cautious, like, is everything okay? And I'm like, yes, I eat. But I was like, little Naomi took only the space she needed. Like, in my imagination, for all the years that I thought about being pregnant, you know, even in my 20s, I imagined that I would be kind of the lady that put on some weight. Like, I was going to be eating cookies and cakes. We didn't crave that. We craved lots of beef, lots of dairy. And that was her craving, because my diet definitely changed. And it went to what she wanted. So I was like, she's very sweet. She only took the space she needed. Like, I was all belly. And she only really demanded what she needed to build herself. So I didn't get fat. I didn't have health issues. It was really amazing. So I would always tell people, like, we're a team. And we are, you know, it's you and the baby. We're a team. So anyway, I do think she chose us.
And this was your first pregnancy. There weren't no miscarriages before.
No. It's not my first pregnancy. I got pregnant at 45 and I did miscarry at 6 weeks.
At 6 weeks. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, yeah. And that really did, when I got pregnant with Naomi, it was really like with a kind of, I don't want to say side eye, but that's for lack of a better word. Like, okay. Well, hesitancy is the word, not side eye, but
I was gonna ask, fear was the word, but hesitancy is what
hesitancy, apprehension. Like, I won't put it all the way at fear, but it was a cousin to fear, you know, okay, we'll see. And it was funny because I was watching those milestones. Like, I had an app where, you know, week after week, it kind of tells you like milestones for your baby. So we hit 13 weeks and it was like risk of miscarriage decreases. I was like, okay, we made it. Yeah. And then I had her 12 week ultrasound and I could see her little, like her whole body, like it shaped up. And I was like, oh, and there's a heartbeat and there's this. Okay. And then I had what's called an anatomy scan where they look to see if she has any abnormalities that would indicate like Down syndrome or anything. Oh, we passed that. And then there was this blood test where they test for like 9,000 different things. And I was like, oh, she came out low risk for, I mean, we just passed milestone after milestone after milestone. And I was like, oh, we're actually doing this. And then when I got to the week where the app said she could survive if born, I can't remember if that's 23 weeks or 28 weeks. I want to say it was 23 weeks, you know, where she could survive if born prematurely. And I was like, hot damn, baby, we made it.
You made it. Yes.
It brings tears to my eyes.
Oh my gosh.
No.
Oh my gosh. And now, and here she is today and she's thriving.
She, girl, just chunky as she want to be. It's that little reflex when I sit her up, her little arms shoot up, but there she is. Oh, she's drunk now. She just had some milk.
Yes.
She just had milk.
Wait, so how old is she? Because she still looks fresh.
She's 6.5 weeks. 7 weeks on Thursday. And
yes.
Yeah, here. Let me see if I can, if tell me if this is okay, because she can be part of the interview now that she ate and she good.
Yes, this is perfect.
Okay.
Wait. How is it now that she's here and with like the feedings and the, you know, the late nights and the early mornings and all the energy and the stamina that you actually have to have even right now? Mm-hmm. How is that going for you? The postpartum part of it.
The postpartum part of it is I almost feel unfair, you know, when I communicate some of the things that I communicate, because so many things are going right, but I am not nearly as tired as I thought that I was going to be.
Okay, Chia. Now you're just showing off. Chia.
Right. That's what I'm like. I have not hit exhaustion with her. Now, I'm not going to say that I don't get tired. Like, for sure, there's tired. For sure, there's days where I'm like handing her off to her dad, like, Mama got to go lay down. Like, I can't do this anymore. Yay. Those are those moments. But it's not nearly as bad as I thought that it was going to be. Now, I have the luxury that I get to stay at home with her. I don't have to get up and go to work. That's a luxury. I don't have other children. That's a luxury.
Are you working remotely or are you able to just focus on Naomi?
I just get to focus on Naomi. My story of this whole evolution of how I wasn't even working when I conceived is very interesting. Now, I have to drink water while doing this because breastfeeding is draining and I'm very thirsty.
Yes, we believe in hydrating here on Soul Mind Boggling Journeys. I'm going to hydrate as well.
Okay, good. But drooling is part of hydrating? Okay.
All of it.
So let me rewind this story a little bit here. So Lauren and I had plans of having our own insurance agency. I had quit my job, studied to get my license, which I did achieve. Shortly after that, I got a call from my cousin in California that my dad had been involved in a really bad car accident. And I had to fly home right away. So my dad was in an accident that left him paralyzed from the neck down. Now, my dad is somebody who many of you know. How old are you, Bettina?
What's your age? Let me tell you something.
Oh, you're an actress. We don't talk age. I'm just going to tell you who my dad is. And if you don't know who he is, you can Google him. Okay.
Okay, go ahead. And then I'm going to say something after this.
You're timeless. Okay. My dad is Roger E. Mosley, and he was famous for being TC, the helicopter pilot of a Magnum PI. He was Goldie's brother in the Mac, you know, just thin line between love and hate. Smith, like, you know, he's got whatever. My dad is a OG Hollywood legend for Black actors and actresses. Okay. And so you're nodding your head, you know who he is.
Do you know that I just learned this last night? In doing research for our recording today, okay, yes. I was like, oh, let me see, what else do I know about her outside of the baby, right, and that journey. And I was flabbergasted because typically I, talk to like artists in the business. And I was like, oh, wait, so there's even an artist connection here. And so I have other questions now based on that. But I was going into this. I love that you segued right on into it, Chia. So continue, please, with your story about that.
Because it's an integral part of the journey in the magic, okay? So my dad, he was 83 years old when he passed away. But when I say my dad was healthy as an ox, like, he drove his big-ass Lincoln Navigator. Like, he was just wild. Like, he still worked out at the gym. He still lifted weights. My dad has always been very involved in children's sports. Like, he even coached me running track all through high school. Even when he was filming Magnum in Hawaii, he picked up a football team and was coaching a football team while doing Magnum. He always was working with children in athletics. So he was healthy. So he was coaching track. And coaching hurdles. But he would be out there track meets all week. Like, my dad was hardy. So even though
you have good genes,
I have very, very good
genes.
Yeah, I got a good gene pool and a good example of how to treat your body as well. So anyway, for my dad to get into this car accident, which left him paralyzed from the neck down, was devastating. Like, my dad was for real the patriarch, the strong man, the still, I got one good hip left. I leave my last good ass kicking for my good, Like, he was still a force to be reckoned with. And so to see him laid out, not being able to move anything, but like kind of his head side to side, was devastating. And so I went to LA to be by his side. Now, granted, he could still talk, like his faculties and his mind was there, just his body, his spinal cord was compressed, so he couldn't move. Long story short, we did not expect him to pass away. All of our conversation was about him healing, right? And just what would it take? What could we expect for him as far as recovery? He went in for spinal decompression surgery, had a blood clot, cardiac arrested on the table, survived that even. But from that point forward, within the days after that event, his body just shut down. I'm just going to fast forward on the drama of all of that. And in fact, it was this time last year that I was in a hospital with him because he passed August 7th. So
it's a year ago, I saw that. Yes.
Yeah, we're in the year anniversary and he passed away. Now, fortunately, I wasn't working. So I had all of my attention to give to him in his final days. And it was the most, my dad and I, we had a tough relationship. At times, he's very opinionated and very hard. Like, he named me. Everybody thinks that my mom named me, but my dad named me. My name means the beginning and the dawn. And he named me, and I was just going to be perfect, and I was going to be this, and I was going to be that. And of course, I wasn't perfect, and of course, I didn't do everything that he thought that I should do. And we would have our ups and downs. And he was probably, outside of myself, my toughest critic and also my biggest supporter, right? But in this time of him being in a hospital, it was like I was his person. There was a respect level that my dad got for me. He just saw me in a new light of how I advocated for him, because his hospital care wasn't the best the whole way through, which was devastating. And it was me who really pushed and pushed and pushed to make sure he got the care that he deserved. And he saw that. And our peace that we had when he passed away was beautiful. It was just like, I couldn't have asked for anything else. And his last words to me and to anybody before he got wheeled into surgery was, "You did good, kid." You know, like he really appreciated all my care. This is a story I don't tell. Anyway, my mom and I had to basically take him off all the supports that he was on because he was not going to recover, and the hospital called us to let us know. I mean, we were prepared for that. But when we left the hospital, you know, she and I kind of hang dog and sad and heavy. There was a couple pulling into the hospital. Let me pull myself together.
No, you're fine.
Okay. There was a couple pulling into the hospital, and the lady was pregnant. She's in a wheelchair, and you clearly see like she's in labor, and the husband is like frantic, like, where does he park the car? And he's all like, got the, my baby's coming thing, right? So I'm watching this as my mom and I are walking out the hospital. And I believe this is the beginning of pulling her in, because I just looked at it and it was everything that I needed to see, because I said, wow, and this is the cycle of life. I was like, we are walking out one less and they are going to leave with one more. And I smiled and I was like, it is just the cycle, Chia. So from that day, you know, I set into planning his memorial, which was fabulous. We had such a good time. It was everything he wanted. My biggest pride is that it was so good. My dad was so loved. Even Beyonce's mama showed, Tina came with her husband, and they danced and partied with us because we did it at his favorite joint, you know, in a South Central LA, just total party, like just total DJ, drinks, turn up. We celebrated. We had such a good time. And I did that. And then I'm, you know, made arrangements to close out the house and, you know, bring my mom back here to Florida with me. She decided she wanted to be with me. I said, okay, good. And just happy to be home after all that drama, because I was gone. It took me a while, you know, memorial, hospital, memorial, house, mama, medical, like it was a lot. So by the time I came home, I was just so relieved to be back home and so happy that I got the support that I got from Lauren while I was gone. And we conceived maybe the day I came back or the day after.
Wait, oh my gosh.
It was just like, you know, happy to, hey honey, I'm home, yay. And weeks later, I'm like, you know, where's my period?
Well, talk about the cycle of life just within your family.
Right. And that's a story that on social media, it's very hard for me to kind of share and get it out right. I've also very much lived in my dad's shadow in some sort of way, like, oh, this is Chia. You know who her daddy is? This is Chia. You know who her daddy is? So on social media, I don't talk about, like, if you look for it, if you scroll through my pages, you'll see, because before there was her, I was sharing what was happening with him on social media, largely because when he was in the hospital, I wasn't vocal about what was happening. So his friends were starting to put on social media, oh, Raj, this is happening. This was happening with Raj. And then one friend put what hospital he was at. I was like, oh, no, like, okay. But this is only happening because the family isn't communicating. So let me reel this back so his friends don't start in good faith, right? Like they're just kind of trying to share what's happening, but putting too much information out there. So I was like, I have to reel this line back in and be the spokesperson for the family so people know what's happening with him while he was in the hospital. So you'll see on social media where I'm talking about he's in the hospital, please pray, we lost him, blah, blah, blah. And I just did that because I realized that somebody needed to. He doesn't, you know, his career wasn't such that he had a PR person anymore or anything. So I was like, oh, I guess I'm it.
Oh my God, that must be so deep in the crates. Cause when I found you, I literally only saw the post about, you know, your conception and leading up to your pregnancy and leading up to the birth.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had gone down deep but clearly not deep enough, because I love how that information came to me, you know? So it's interesting hearing you say how you grew up in a shadow. I love that that was not my introduction to you, even though I'm in that world. Like, what are the odds of that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole nother podcast we could do of just simply growing up Black Hollywood and what that looked like. Because my life growing up, definitely, especially for the era in which I came up, you know, Daddy had a Rolls Royce. Like, we was, like, Black folks were rolling around in Rolls Royce. I mean, they are now, you know, but, like, I had quite a life coming up. It was a lot of fun. I'm nuanced.
You're nuanced. Well, one thing I did want to ask you is with the writer's strike that's happening now, the writers and the actors strike, right? Mm-hmm. What I wanted to ask you was, you know, because your dad was a part of Magnum PI, I wanted to ask you what those years were like post Magnum PI in terms of, like, did you feel like your family had, you know, the livelihood and the residuals coming in to take care of you? I wanted to know if you had any kind of, you know, insight or any type of personal story to share about that in light of where we are today with actors and writers fighting for residuals and their likeness and such. And especially now that there's like a reboot, there's a Magnum PI reboot. So how that, you know, how you all felt about that and such.
Yeah. So growing up, there was definitely a certain lifestyle, but I want to say Magnum went off air.
I was 588. It was 588.
Yeah, I was like 9-10 years old, first of all. Right. So that I was very, very young. Like, I remember being just about a baby when I first saw my dad on a TV and being very confused about why his face was on a TV and being telling my mother, Daddy's in the TV. Daddy's in the TV. Like, it was very, I was like, how did he get in there? So I was young when Magnum wrapped up. So there was no immediate change to my lifestyle at that point.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Money's still good. You know, he's still doing movies and other things. Like, he kept working for a very long time. Probably wasn't until I went to college that you start to see like a real lull in his career. But at that point, now I'm at Georgia Tech. I'm in Atlanta. I'm living my best life. Like, life at home becomes a distant thing. And in fact, after college, I don't return back to LA to live with my mom and dad. I stay in Atlanta. I get my own life going. Then I move after Atlanta to Las Vegas to get my master's degree. And I'm out there. Like, once I left home at 17, I pretty much stayed away from home. And then my dad was able to live off residuals.
Okay.
He was able to live off residuals. And until this day, like, there's still residuals. Like, my mom is a beneficiary of that. And I haven't seen like an issue with that. Obviously, as the years go on, you know, Magnum isn't probably running as hot and heavy as it was in the 90s or whatever, but it's still running. And it's cute to see the residuals come in, because it's like, oh, there was this episode of Starsky and Hutch. Oh, there's a thin line between love and hate. And, you know, I get to really get an idea of my dad's career by seeing all the episodes that are listed on the residual. So it's an insight into him and his career. And I respect that he worked so hard that in his passing, there's still income. Like, I just think it's cool, you know?
Yes.
It's really cool. And
providing for you all and taking care of you all from the afterlife.
Yeah, you know,
we have to give a shout out to Stephen Hill, who now plays the character that your dad played. So that's great. We have to give him a shout out.
We do have to give him a shout out. And we are in contact, and he was one of the ones who showed up for my dad's memorial. Like, he really loved my dad and respected my dad and the time he got to spend with him. And he is a sweet, sweet soul. In fact, the day that I went into labor, I was in contact with Stephen Hill. If you look back in my feed, you'll see where I'm debating giving Stephen a beanie that my dad had, right? It's been laying on my dresser, and I've been trying to figure out what to do with it. I believe he wore it in the Mac it's a piece of history, but I also know him from just wearing it as my dad. And I decided that I want to give it to Steven. And that day that we made that decision, I went into labor, so I haven't mailed it to him yet, but I need to. And Steven knows, like, he's like, you know, take your time, whatever. I even put it to social media, like, should I give it to Steven Hill? And people were like, no, save it for your granddaughter or keep it as a keepsake. And I'm going to tell you something. When you are as accomplished as my father, there is so many keepsakes. Like, yeah. I was cleaning out the house. I was like, Dad, this is too many trophies.
Oh, wow. Yes.
So many trophies, so many acknowledgments. I mean, from the, not even just in acting, but community involvement. Like, he was, my dad was really a humanitarian. So when people are like giving me grief over this one beanie, I'm like, Lord have mercy, child. You have not, I got enough keepsakes. And I was like, I think Stephen will do a great job keeping it alive. And I was like, let's see it on camera again. So I'm going to be mailing that off to him now that I've put it here on video.
That is beautiful. So let me ask you, so what are you hoping to take from your dad and then impart to Naomi? Like, how do you want Naomi to know about, what do you want her to know about her grandfather and hopefully take from him and his legacy?
I think the biggest things that I want Naomi to take from his legacy are the things that I took from his legacy. And this is a very big deal for me. And I'm going to say, and I said this at his memorial service, the biggest thing, there's two things that my dad gave me that are the most important ever. The one thing that he gave me is don't do drugs. This was very much an anti-drug, anti-cigarette upbringing. And he made very, very sure that I was disinterested in drugs. And we live in a very drug-friendly culture right now. And I don't do drugs. I don't smoke weed. I don't chew gummies. I don't smoke cigarettes. I don't whatever, you know, like I work very hard to stay away from these things. And I think that that plays a role in my health in this age. The choices that we make coming up along the line can make a big deal when you're older. So that was one thing that I really appreciate about him is that, you know, to really be healthy and to take care of myself. So that's from my dad. He raised me that way, and I maintain that outlook, and I intend to impart that to her to really keep her mind and her body healthy. The second thing about my dad was he was the one that taught me how to be a winner. When he was my track coach, he was training me to be a champion. It was never like, oh, let's get the fifth place trophy. He hated that. You know, kids that get trophies for participation. He was so not into be like having to placate everybody. He was very much into you work hard and you win. And I remember one day it was raining in California, which, you know, it's not all that common, but I think it was like in an El Nino time. And I just got my hair done. So, you know, my hair was like straight, laid, and I didn't have a perm, and it was raining and track practice was canceled. So I'm like, oh yeah, no practice. And so he comes home and he's like, come on. And I'm like, where are we going? And he's like, practice. And I'm like, but it's raining. And he's like, so while everybody else is at home, this is where you win. These are the days where you win. And he had me out in the rain, girl, just.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So let me ask you now, did you appreciate it then the way that you do now? Yeah. I was going to say, because, you know, I have friends that, you know, have very successful and very, you know, hard driving, you know, fathers. And maybe at the time they didn't see that as like, oh, he was teaching me how to be a winner. They took it as like, oh my gosh, like, I'm like, you know, trying to like keep up and I'm trying to control my, you know, my worth and show, you know, there's that piece of it. But it seems like, did you feel the same way then? And now that you're older, you see the benefit of it?
This is an appreciation now that I'm older.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
Not to say that there weren't things that I did pick up from him at the time, like, because he did make me a champion. Like, I'll give you an example. So my name is spelled CH-A. So, you know, my name gets butchered. Cha-a-che-cha-a-che-de. You know, like, people can't get it right. And so when I first started out running, my name would get mispronounced all the time. And here's Cha'a Mosley from blah high school in lane 7. And so I would complain to my dad, they always say my name wrong. They always say it wrong. And he was like, don't worry. He says, when you start winning, they'll say it right. And sure enough, when I started to become a first place contender, like he really trained me up nice. Here we have Chia Mosley, lane five. Here's Chia Mosley, lane four. The one to watch, the one to watch in this heat, Chia Mosley. And he was right. And so that was something I was like, wow, daddy, you were right. Like, so it is something like an acknowledgement you get for your hard work. You get acknowledged for who you are and people respect you to the point of even being willing to learn how to pronounce your name correctly. It's a little details. And that was one that I did appreciate that at that time, I thought that was really cool that by winning, you know, I was granted the respect of a correctly pronounced name, you know?
Yeah. So,
anyway, there were definitely wins along the way, and it was surely fun to get trophies and to win. And out of everybody in my entire life till this day, he has been the main one to push being a winner. He was like, whatever you do, do the best at it that you can do. He's like, whether it's brushing your teeth, running track, whatever it is, do your best. And he's been the only person in my entire life to insist upon that. He was never one for pushing mediocrity. And that's a legacy that I keep with me. You know, I feel bad when I'm being mediocre at something. Even coming on with you today, I was like, well, I could pull the, you know, I'm a new mom, but I'm like, well, let me put a little lipstick on my face. Well, let me, you know what? You put the frizz down. And so as I talk to you, maybe that is also the success of my motherhood. It's an attitude that I have, and that is instilled in me with my dad. To whatever you do, do it well. And, you know, you don't have to be suffering or dramatic with it. Like, do your best to make it go right. And it's just an attitude, you know, that he left me with. And I get it sometimes, like when I post, like, yeah, I recovered or my scar is healing. And, you know, I get the comments, take your time, you know, make sure you rest, give yourself grace. And all those things are true. But there's this Roger E. Mosley inside of me that says, get right. Get right and get right quick. Because I'll tell you, my dad, he had a back injury many, many years ago. He slipped his disc and he was back on the ski slopes in 3 months. Because that's just his attitude. It's not like you push yourself. It's not like you hurt yourself. It's not like you become unreasonable with yourself. But you have an attitude about yourself that, yeah, I'm going to get back up and at him quick.
Right.
So that's wow.
Okay. So with that, so mm-hmm. What is your like postpartum plan in terms of like, you know, like, are you walking and like, what are you thinking? How are you looking at your postpartum recovery? And then also the fact that you know, Naomi's going to be a little toddler soon and you're going to need to be running after her. Like, so how are you planning and preparing for that?
Fair enough. So the first thing for me was to recover from the C-section. That was the first step.
That is the most important.
Yeah, that because I've never had any surgery in my entire life. So, of course, the first one I have is having all my gut ripped through. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it big, right? So that's been the first step. And I feel like I'm about 92% recovered from the C-section. Like there's little hints of like, But so that was the first step. So I've accomplished that, was to get well. Now the second step is to lose weight, which has largely happened with breastfeeding. So I've started walking with her, like baby walking with her as she gets heavier and heavier each week. Like she's literally like a little bowling ball. So carrying her, like I feel it in my legs and, you know, it's a good, you know, workout. She gets her vitamin D and mama gets some steps in. So I walk about a quarter of a mile with her. So there's that, like just taking it easy. Like I'm not trying to strain myself, but I'm looking at my stomach and it feels like jello. And my legacy for my entire life has been, Chia has a tiny waist. I have always been this small waist girl. So I don't have the small waist anymore. Like I look great for just having had a baby, you know, and I acknowledge that.
You for self-acknowledgement and self-appreciation.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that. Like, I feel like, I'm proud. Like, wow, like that you're doing good, right? Like, I definitely acknowledge my wins along the way. So the next step will be, you know, tightening up, right? Just getting the body right. And if I do that, that'll make me more fit for her. I don't know how to prepare myself for when she's on wheels, you know, just...
And get ready. That's going to be like that. Okay.
And she is strong. Like she's got muscles. It's insane. insane. I was like, is she Roger to come back? Like, literally, I would watch her in the womb, like in the last weeks in the womb, like she's big and it's tight. And I could see her shuffling. Like, I could see her little body muscling from one side of the womb to the other. I said, she's going to be strong. And sure enough, like, she literally has guns. So I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's any preparation for it. And that's probably another part of my spirit, is I don't worry myself about what's to come in the future. I just go in with the confidence that it's going to be all right and I'll figure it out.
Yes. And that you'll have everything that you need.
Yeah. The biggest thing I will say this, though, we live in a 3-story townhome, which was great when it was just he and I. This was like the biggest, like, this is great. Like, we got this townhome. It's just the two of us. And like that, you know, mom came and then we have a baby and we're like, we got to move. And I was like, and we need a 1-story, because when she's running, I'm not trying to be chasing her up and downstairs or worried about her falling downstairs or picking her up, like, stairs. So one thing in preparation is moving.
Okay. Yeah,
I think we're going to have to confront that, because 3-story townhouse with a toddler sounds horrible, if you ask me. And probably every other mother who's seeing this is like, girl, you need to move.
Well, okay. So another thing I want to ask you, what would you impart upon moms to be, women who want to be mothers, and current mothers? Like, what would you impart upon them?
I would say treat your journey like you would anything else. You know, name what it is that you're looking for, because I feel like that's something successful that we did. We named how we wanted to conceive. You know, it's just like any other goal in life. Like, don't be afraid to be particular about what you want, because what you think you can achieve is the first thing. Take good care of yourself. Like, make decisions for your body, thinking into the future. I cannot impress upon that enough. I do think, again, that we live in a society that pushes choices that are not good for the long term. They may be good short term choices, but, you know, look at how your body may be doing in the long term. So take good care of yourself, exercise, take your supplements, be in really good communication with your partner about what he wants and what you want, and make sure that you're aligned in that. Because I think, again, that was a very key part of us being able to conceive, is that we were in alignment with how we wanted to do it. And be willing to experience anything. It could be that your time for conception has passed. That very well could be, like, nature. There is a clock. There is a clock. And I hate to see maybe women are like maybe beating themselves up for not being able to get it done and trying so hard that it becomes no longer fun. You know, I did talk to a friend of mine about that. She's in her 40s and she's been trying to conceive, and she's just done everything possible to try to make a baby come. So much that sex with her partner is no longer enjoyable. It's like a task for the man, you know? And I say, be wary of doing that to your conception journey, because, again, in my belief, there is a being coming into your family. And it's like, take a step back and look at what you're bringing a baby into. And is it a scene that a baby would want to come into? You know, mommy and daddy are stressed out over you arriving or not arriving, and it's got to come. And is that something that a person would want to come into? Because your baby is a person. It's a small person, but it's a person. So take a step back and look at your dynamic, your sexual dynamic with your partner, and your baby conception dynamic. And has it gotten so stressful that it could be unappealing to come into, you know? I think those are my words. And again, my whole journey has just been, I think, a series of things done right. You know, good health, good fitness, making sure that I'm happy, talking out any emotional baggage that I may have accumulated in life and not bringing that forward with me. That's another thing. I don't carry baggage.
Wow. That's a big one. To get yourself right before bringing a child into your energy and your space, right?
That's right. Or even a man. Clean up the baggage from the last man before you go looking for the new one. Clean up your baggage about your daddy or your brother or your male cousin, anything that may be kind of hanging around you mentally like a little noose, constricting your freedom, you know? Take it, you know, talk it out, seek church counsel, talk to your friends, just talk it out wherever is the safest place to do so, you know, and make sure that you're mentally prepared for the next step in your life so that you can have all that you can have. So I don't know. I feel like these are all the things that I was never trying to conceive. But when I look back at all the steps that I took, I was set up for conception at a miraculous time in life.
Wow. Oh my gosh. And okay. And so we're going to end on this note. I saw that little baby Naomi has actually given you baby fever for another baby.
See, everybody's missed the subheader to that.
I missed it. What did it say?
I were younger.
Oh, girl, that must have been in the 10 font. Because I was like, oh my gosh, does she want to have another baby? Is she going to give it another go?
Literally. Like,
a quasi announcement? Like, wait. I know it's too soon.
No. You know what? I think that this was divine. Just the whole cycle with my dad, his passing, watching the cycle of life in the hospital and everything. Like, I think it all ties into how well this has gone. Do I think that I should keep trying to have babies after the age of 47? Not really. Everything went so right that it was divine. It was absolutely divine. And I feel like asking to do it again is a bit, I call it testing the hands of God. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this
one and done,
that she's healthy, I'm healthy, and it went as beautifully as it did. You know, there are increased risk when you have babies older. Like, yes, it sucks to have to talk about it, but they're, you know, the doctors are not insane when they're warning us. It's not fun to listen to, but there is some statistical facts about having babies when you're older and what the outcome for your baby could be and what the outcome for you could be. And I escaped every last piece of it. So I like that. I like that story.
It's like, get out and dash, girl. Run for it.
I'm running for it. I am.
Grab your baby and go.
That's right. Claim my little.
You have to line up for the blessings. Okay, you got your blessings.
like a thank you.
God has so many blessings. He is a plentiful God.
Yeah, so my next goal that I ask for God is just to have a good girl, you know, who makes good choices in life and grows up to be a healthy, beautiful, smart, and loving young lady. Like, that's the next blessing. Because again, you know, in this day and age, there's a lot of pitfalls out there, and I'm just hoping she navigates them well. So that's what I'm asking for God.
And with you as her mother, I mean, I think that she's got a great head start for sure.
Oh, thank you. And she's got a good daddy too. Ooh, they got their own thing going on.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much. You and beautiful Naomi, thank y'all so much for coming onto the podcast. This has been great.
Yay. You're famous, baby. You're famous, girl.
Yeah, I love it because Naomi started off like, wait a minute, hold up.
She's like, I can't be bothered.
Right. And then she's been like, okay, y'all go ahead. She's been out the whole time now. Oh, my goodness.
This breast milk is the truth.
Yes, that liquid gold.
She got me thinking I should bottle it up and put it on the market. It's like, what is in it, baby? What is it?
Well, thank you again so much. This has been so lovely. And thank you for the inspiration. Thank you for sharing your story and, you know, giving a lot of moms and moms to be hope. And I just can't thank you enough. So
thank you so much for reaching out to me. This has definitely become my new mission, because when I started posting on social media, I didn't think that I was going to be a story of inspiration. I started posting because I was scared and afraid. And so to push myself out of my worries and apprehensions about the pregnancy, I said, well, I'm just going to go the other way and I'm just going to talk about it. And if something goes wrong and I don't go to full term, well, I'm sure I'll get support from the community. They'll understand. And that it's turned into inspiration and hope for so many women. I'm going to keep going because I'm like, oh yeah, honey, if I can get pregnant at 40, miscarry at 45, and then conceive again at 46 and have a healthy baby and a healthy pregnancy. Well, people need to hear this good news, because you don't hear about it from the medical profession. Like, this will be the last thing that I say to you about it. And that is, I liken pregnancy at this age to almost like being diagnosed with like a stage four cancer. You go to the doctor, you're like, well, has anybody survived it? Like, is there any successful story? Like, did anybody come out of this okay? Or did they all die? Like, did anybody live? And that's a dramatic comparison, but it's almost like that you just want to hear, did one lady, do you know of any lady who did it successfully? And you don't get these stories out the medical office, whether they know about them or not, they're not really sharing. So I realized, I was like, I have to tell my story that, hey, I did it. I conceived naturally and I was healthy too. And I didn't have blood pressure and my baby doesn't have any kind of chromosome issues or, you know, anything like that. I survived. So here's your one, at least, that you can cling on to and know that it's possible.
Wow. So mind-boggling.
It's so mind-boggling. Girl, I agree. Every day I look at her, I was like, wow, I can't believe it. Some day I'm still crying. I look at her like, I had a baby. Look, everybody, look at her. She's like, "We, mom, if you don't stop shaking me." I'm just excited about your baby.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. And how beautiful this is. It looks like she's about to wake up. How perfect.
Yeah. She's up. Okay, show everybody your face, girl.
She's awake.
I know my aunt was like, she's always sleeping. And I'm like, no, she wakes up.
Hi, Naomi. Thanks, Naomi. Ah!
Yes, hey, everybody.
Hi, Naomi. We had a good old chat about you, girl.
We sure did. Thank you, baby, for cooperating. I appreciate that. You see what her onesie says? Hold on. Can you see it?
Does it say Mommy Minnie?
Mommy's Minnie.
Mommy's Minnie. Oh,
she looked just like a daddy.
Adorable.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And thank you, honey, for being a good girl.
Thank you both.
Yes. Very nice to meet you. Let's keep in touch, huh?
Yes, absolutely.